from super hot sunny San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 40, in a room full of texting and Googling planeswalkers. Come on, guys. You can make eye contact. I know the listeners can't see, but I'm in the room, too.
I'm sorry. Who are you?
We've got Evan Wardell. How you doing, Evan? We've got Larry Chatfield. Larry, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
You put me on the spot?
We've passed you already.
Let me just take a minute
Your
and think about
left
my life.
About 30 seconds ago.
How am I doing? You know, I thought I was doing well, but
clearly
now we're into this shit. I'm not so sure.
Well, I thought this podcast was doing well until you opened your mouth. God. Anyways, you must be doing pretty good because you did really actually well this last weekend. Sorry to go over myself. I'm Cole Ferriolo, also a member here. Welcome to the show.
I'm here, by the way, too.
Let's get this horse back on the tracks. No, but Evan.
You said whores.
No, I said whores.
You said whores.
All right. Well, let's get both back on the track and this podcast rolling. We have a lot to cover this week. It's been very busy. All played in Friday Night Magic last Friday. We were all actually in the same pod. I drafted a pretty interesting deck. I had a Sultai kind of control list.
You fucked me.
Yeah, I totally wrecked you. You were sitting next to me, right?
Yeah, when you open your Bomb Black Rare and I open my Bomb Black Rare, things don't go well.
Well, look, it was your fault for sitting on my left and downstream. Sorry,
and
buddy.
And I think that statement is basically all there is to be said about this draft format.
That's true. Yeah, I opened like Crux of Fate and just was like, well, going to play black now. Actually, no, I was helping you out. I opened Crux of Fate and my land was a wooded foothill. So I was passing you a fetch, buddy. I'm just saying. I threw an olive branch over there.
I took the kitty.
You took the Chimer Charger? So you went...
No, I took the Teamer Sabertooth.
Oh, sorry. I always forget. Sabertooth, of course. Yeah.
I didn't take... Actually, I passed...
That was my opening pack. That's the thing about this format. Some of the packs are just balls to the wall, busted. Like, I had Wooded Foothills. I had Crux of Fate. I had Teamer Sabertooth. I think I had another, like, premium uncommon that was really good. Like, I passed form or something.
I passed two fetch lands to the guy next to me, and he's like, he turns to me and goes, I love you.
Yeah. I got past the fetch land.
He opened it, and he passed it to me, and I was like, well, I have, like, literally, like, six or seven copies of every fetch land.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm like, I passed it to him, and the guy's like, literally, like, just, like, you know, came in his pants right there. And I'm like, so then, like, when I opened, the other went the same way again.
In
pack three,
yep.
You
cracked another fetch?
I cracked another fetch. So I had Arc Lightning and my land. And I just passed it to him, and he's like, oh, my God.
Got past the Bloodstained Mire. That was my second pick. And I actually ended up playing it for value. I ended up splashing red for – I basically played Sultai splash red for two Temur. What is that? The 5/5 trample. You on Morph. Snowhorn Riders.
Yes.
Two Snowhorn Riders.
That's what I hear.
That's exactly
when
what
I see that.
That's
card.
What it was. When I flipped it up, it was like Snowhorn Rider coming in.
Along with
like,
your clever impersonator?
I had a clever impersonator.
It was so awesome that one game you had both of them on there.
Yes. I flip it up and then I clone it and I'm like, all right.
Did I play you?
You did play me. We played each other in the second round.
Oh, yeah, you beat me.
Yeah, I beat you. You were actually the one I got the wombo combo, so I also had...
My deck was terrible.
Yeah, your deck was kind of...
I remember you cleverly impersonated, like, some piece of shit. Like a... It's some bad creature, like a 1/1 or something. It was really bad.
You know, I think I've never clever impersonated an opponent's creature. I've just always cloned something else that I needed on the battlefield, whether it's another flyer or like another Snowhorn Rider or something. It's funny, I've rarely cast a card in my opponent. But I did get to cast my Villainous Wealth against you. I actually got to cast it a lot. But I remember playing you, Evan, it was especially special because I got to cast it with the mana I was generating off my Green Siege.
I
also drafted one of those. And it was good times.
Which is funny because Evan was
I kept
like,
saying it was a terrible card.
I opened this and it's a terrible card, and then I look over
it.
And you're just like raping him.
It went all the way to me, and it was like,
excuse me,
it was a different one.
Oh, it was a different one. Okay. Yep.
Well, I didn't open that card, and for the record, for like five turns in a row, you did not. You only cast one card a turn off of it. Like used one of the green mana.
Well, all right. I think the second the turn I untapped with it, I think I got two spells, but then yes, like the next three or four turns, it was just one spell turn. It wasn't amazing. Although in other games, it really like Larry, game, you
match one, you were
match one. I was doing really well with it, but I was also like you were watching me, and I felt so bad because I knew I was punting like left and right. Because I literally go turn four, you know, I've got my fourth land, I slam it out. It's a slow game. He doesn't have any pressure on me, and then I untap, and then I have like four cards in my hand, and I can cast all of
them.
I can cast everything, and I can cast two of things like. I can cast more like two spells in my hand easily that turn. I really like was hemming and hawing, and I think I definitely did the wrong thing.
You did.
I ended up just like hard casting Snowhorn Rider.
How late in the game was this?
This was literally turn five. So I turn four this thing, untap, turn five. Now I'm like,
and he just fumbled the ball.
I fumbled. I was like, I thought I was gonna like cast Snowhorn Rider and draw two and lose two life and like go through my deck and draw a couple cards off of that black spell.
Bitter Revelation,
but like. I had like seven mana to play, and what I ended up doing was like casting it, and then realizing actually I kind of needed the blocker, so I just like unflipped it.
I think like, you had a Sidisi.
I did have a Sidisi in that deck too.
God damn it.
Okay, game three, I totally punted. I went to the finals.
Match three?
No, round three. Sorry, round three. Yeah, round three, I definitely punted. The first game, my opponent got mana screwed, and I was able to play like just go Snowhorn Rider, unmorph Snowhorn Rider, and like. If you miss like a land drop or two, like if you just get any kind of tempo on your opponent and you unflip your morph, like at least a full turn before they can unflip their morph, you're just kind of dead in this part.
It's really awkward that five drop, like that is so terrible when like
which five drop?
Just any of those like you know common five
like
drops
you just
where like
you know,
they
you
have
unmorph
a morph
a 4/5 or you unmorph a 5/5.
Oh, the morph creatures that the six like, drops that. Unmorph for five.
Yeah. Like,
and like you, if they're going first and you've like, you're on turn four and then they play their fifth land and they attack into you and you're
those
like,
cards are good.
You're like, fuck.
Yeah. If you're on the draw and you miss a land drop and they just go like, morph, unflip a morph, you're just, and you're like barely putting one morph out, you're just so far behind.
Yeah. And the reason I don't like that Green Siege is for the, you lose the tempo of playing that on turn four. That's like one, more creature you don't get to play that turn.
Yeah.
The next time you get to on turn five, it seems unlikely that you'll be able to play two spells in a turn.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like two more turns before you can even get the tempo advantage off of that climbs you back out of
the
hole you created.
Like when he did it, he played his fifth land. He had basically seven mana between two phases with which to do things.
You can't even flip up a good morph and cast another morph with that.
No, but what he could have done, what he could have done is played his morph and cast Bitter Revelation in the same turn.
That's true. I mean, look, there's ways to do it, but that's not even that particularly spectacular. It's nice. I think it's good, but it doesn't pull you out of the tempo hole you created for yourself by playing the spell in the first place. So you're not going to be able to pull out of that tempo hole for like another turn or two.
Yeah, I would say that you are underestimating its next turn bounce back a little bit, but you are pegging it quite
nicely.
But
you can also just like, you know, you can just get like seven mana too. Like
yeah,
you play your fifth land
there are turns.
Well, Cole was playing Vilnus Wealth. So
I was also playing Vilnus, so
I
had a little bit more definition in my deck. But
it's a little more fun. I
like
that.
And I also just was playing like a lot of expensive morphs. So my idea was just like if I could start playing morphs and unflipping morphs in the same turn, that was good.
Yeah,
and
just play your mana, man.
Yeah,
you could
have
had another morph out there that you could have flipped up instead
of... Yeah, I mean, I was honestly, like, my deck didn't have probably another... Like, it had probably a decent 23rd playable, but, like, not that much better. Like, I don't feel like it hurt my deck terribly. But you're right. I mean, there's sometimes... Like, behind, it was bad, but thankfully I never drew it behind.
I think when it comes right down to it, the card's fine. It's not terrible. I mean, I'm just, you know, playing the devil's advocate here. I think it's a totally fine card. I just don't think it's amazing.
It's not a bomb.
It's something that got passed to me like fifth pick, and I took it, and I was like, I'll take a whim on it. And it totally felt fine about it.
Yeah. It certainly wasn't like my Palace Siege.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Palace Siege is much better.
I remember you Vilnus Wealthed me, and you got like, I'm like, too bad for you. My deck's filled with shitty creatures.
I like exploded. I almost like coughed beer up or something because it's really funny because game one, I Vilnus Wealthed somebody for like seven and I drew
one thing.
I got four land. The three spells were Whisk Away, Summon Prowler, And what's the one where you discard a card and then draw two cards? And I had no cards in hand. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. And I play the Summer Prowler, like, great. And then he, like, untaps, draws. He's like, ooh, great. And plays a 4/4 dragon. And I'm just like, seriously, guy? Like, I couldn't, like, he was beating me early. And then I, like, stabilized and fought my way back. And his deck wasn't the best. And he'd clearly, like, the way he could beat Villainous Wealth was just having crappy cards on the
top. I think you got like a smoldering Ifrit and like,
yeah,
I don't know, some other piece of crap. Just like,
well, no, I guess
cards.
You was the best because I got
really funny.
I got your the 3/2 with the lifelink and then Outlast,
Abzan,
the Abzan Battle Priest, and like your
best
2/1
card in my deck,
your 2/1 flyer that unmorphs and gains 2
the
life,
the
Watcher of the Roost. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. But then in the finals, I cast it. So, like, in the game 3 of our finals. So, my opening pack 3 rare was Mardu Ascendancy. And I was like, there was not a lot else for me in the pack that would have been very good at my deck at that point. And I did, like, shutter pause, almost think, like, man, I just lost this card way too many times. I should just take it. I should just totally red draft this. We're like, no, take another morph. Take something reasonable.
And then you get wrecked by it.
Game 2, he plays it on turn 3, and I just lose. Game 3...
Oh, you played Javier, didn't you?
I did play Javier. He plays it on turn 3. My opening hand is Crux of Fate, is the Drown in Sorrow for 5 mana in this format. What is it called? Like Devour by Crocodiles, whatever that card is.
Devour by Crocodiles.
The 5 mana black-green...
You mean Death Frenzy?
Death Frenzy.
Let's say... let's call it Devour by Crocodiles.
That's what the picture is. It's guys get eaten by crocodiles. So I have like
Dead Drop.
3 mana. Well, Dead Drop is also another guy getting eaten by crocodiles.
There's a lot of crocodiles eaten.
There are a lot of super crocodile pictures.
Which is funny because like the only crocodile in the set is those terrible fucking Karo Dreadmaws that are just like unplayable.
You know, it's kind of a myth that they should have made Gurmag Angler a big crocodile. Like, that should have been the good crocodile.
Yeah.
Yeah, some
been, like,
big
zombie crocodile.
Yeah. Instead of a zombie fish.
Yeah.
I like zombie fish, but zombie crocodile would be badass.
Yeah. Yeah, so he drops at turn 3. I have 2 Wraths in my hand. So I'm like, okay. I think I can
stabilize.
The Karo
Dreadmaw should have been just some fat fish that can't attack. It's a defender. So it's like this really super big fat fish with like little tiny little flipper. It just sits there and doesn't really do anything.
They should have switched the art.
Freak of nature.
Yeah.
Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. I lost the finals, basically. I threw everything at him. I threw 2 Wraths. I Villainous Wealth him. And still he beat me.
Yeah, and I think this is very telling of this draft format right now. I saw a pack that had Mardu Ascendancy and Mardu Charmin. It was like 8th pick.
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys, we all fucked up.
Well,
we
also,
all blew it.
Also, this draft, there was tons and tons of Temur going around, too.
Yeah. I was passing Temur Ascendancy.
Green and blue
like
seemed kind of
bottom
open
3
where
picks.
I was.
I should have went into Temur, really, when I thought about it.
I was getting a lot of red signals at the end of pack 1.
I was the only one, I think.
Yeah, you were drafting
red. I think I was the only one drafting red.
No, I was drafting red. And the guy right next to me was drafting red.
Really?
No. If Larry was drafting red upstream of you, and the guy upstream of you were drafting red too.
No, the guy the guy right downstream of me.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So
he wasn't drafting red.
Larry was getting packs like, you were like 3 people ahead of me in pack 1.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was the next one drafting red, and I ended up in like red-blue. Guy right to my right, drafted
blue. Yeah. I played him round 1.
And I looked over when we all looked at our cards. I was like, all right, I think I ended up in the right colors. Like, I looked kind of upstream of me. I was like, all right, blue and red aren't that represented right now. This is pretty good. I looked directly to my right, and I'm like, seriously, guy? Are you kidding me? I was cutting these off so hard. I don't... And he got a rare early on, and he kind of stuck to that rare.
He chewed that bone, and he's like,
what
fucking
was his rare? I don't think I saw it, because that was the guy at Villainous Wealth, and I'm like, oh, all your cards suck.
I don't know.
And he puts a 4/4 dragon, and it just like beats me.
I had 3 Arrow Storms.
That's nice.
Yeah. How did you do? You played Black-Red.
Yeah, which is really weird, because that's not, like, I actually... drafted the Temur Kitty as my second.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I literally never saw another green card. So you were drafting green, and the guy in front of you was drafting green.
Yep.
And not only did I not see good green cards, but I didn't see green cards at all. So I'm like, well, I'll take, you know, a red card, and I'll take another red card, and I'll take another red card.
Yeah.
And so my deck was mostly red with some black for, like, the Palace.
The mostly red decks aren't terrible, though. Like, if you're the guy who's mostly red, you get fed pretty
well. You do need a lot.
You do need
of good cards,
a pyrotechnics. You need, like,
there's like a huge drop off in card quality.
It's not very
You need the heel cutters.
It's not a very deep pool like blue.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're not, no one else is drafting it. And I think I had the best deck at the table, but I lost to my opponent like when I drew two land both games.
Oh yeah, round one. I looked over and I saw you kind of frustrated as like.
But match two, I wrecked the guy with the. With my Vault Breaker combo with Palace Siege. It's so good.
Wait. How is that working?
So basically, I attack.
Yep.
So I, and then you can
Vault Breaker lets you rummage when you
rummage.
When you
so I discard a creature.
Oh.
Draw a card. And then during my upkeep, I just bring the creature back.
Oh, with the Siege.
Yeah. So it was actually really interesting looking back on it. I ended up in blue early on in pack one, and blue seemed to be okay. Like it was kind of coming around. It was kind of petering in the whole time, and I think this just might be a symptom of how deep blue is.
Yeah.
I felt like I was getting decent blue all through. I was getting cut a little bit in pack two, and I realized why after the fact. But in pack three, I was getting hooked up with some really good blue cards like late into the pack, so I was really happy with being in blue. And red too seemed like there was a lot of good red going around. Then I just kind of ended up in Jeskai. And I got like four War Flares out of pack one. I'm like, all right, I got all these. Like, this is going to be great.
I've been there.
And
yeah, like
the correct thing was to be in Mardu, not Jeskai, the other red-white clan, because Mardu was wide open, and that made itself, you know, clear in the next two packs. But the bummer about the War Flares, the 11th creature in my deck. That it was hard to find this 11th creature.
Oh no!
Was Venerable Lamassu?
Is it the 5/6 for like
a
bajillion
seven.
And a half mana?
Yeah.
I played 11 creatures. Eventually, reluctantly, went down to 10.
It's a flying llama.
It's
what I can tell.
Yeah,
is it a flying llama? Is it like a real thing? Like in mythology?
It's a real magic card.
It's a real.
No, but I mean, is it like?
No, there's somebody
there
who
might
worships.
Be.
That's like
they just
some
made
reference.
It up.
No, I don't think they made it up.
Wikipedia that shit.
Actually,
you got a Wikipedia that shit.
I do have the iPad. For you.
I think maybe it's that thing that in the Neverending Story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I keep when I see that thing. That's what it makes me think of
that big flying dog thing.
And it's not quite the same, but it might as well be.
Yeah, but yeah, I ended up going down to 10 creatures because Venerable Lamassu is a piece of crap. And put in like Quiet Contemplation because like I just had one and I had so many just crappy cards, just like crappy like Jeskai spells that gain you tempo
pressure point.
Yeah, just
which
like a bunch of
really
stuff.
Which is really great when you have a bunch of creatures in your... Oh, wait.
Yeah, it was my deck was a pile, basically. Mm. But it was a learning experience. On the point of flavor in cards, though, this came up this week when I was doing a crossword puzzle with our lovely producer, Lucy. We were doing a crossword puzzle at lunch, and... one of the hints was like a nymph that lives in the mountains. And it was like
Seder?
O-R. I'm like, oh, Oread. Great.
Oh, awesome.
Like, what the hell is an Oread? I'm like, oh, they're a magic thing. I know they're like Seder-y things. And so I looked up Oread on Wikipedia, and they're like nymphs that live in the mountains.
Yeah.
And there's only two Oreads in Theros Block, and it's Spearborn Oread and Forgeborn Oread, which are both red creatures that you cast with mountains.
Yeah.
Flavor win. Good job, Wizards. Yeah. Good job. That made me really excited on my lunch break.
That's awesome. How excited were you to finish 25th this weekend at the PTQ down at Channels Fireball? You rebounded on Friday and played pretty good on Saturday.
We switched positions.
By the end of the by the end of the day, I think my hangover was subsiding. it was all right, you know.
Yeah. What did you get? You got some store credit.
It seemed like you were dodging and weaving all the decks to find every blue black deck in the room.
God. Yeah, so I got
every time I go over, he's fucking playing a blue black deck. I'm like, what the? And there wasn't that much of it there, like you know.
But well, what happened is I just lucked my way into getting paired against it in round two.
Mm-hmm.
I won round one. Round two, I played against blue black control. I squeaked out a draw, just like squeaked it out, because you know, I like won game two in round and like time. Like I won it, and then they called time. Like well,
which then means you're going to be playing every other blue black deck.
Cause
they're the ones with the draw
drew against blue black.
Like you said last week, you're like, I don't really because it goes too long, and you draw. That's anyway. So you played it in round two.
Yeah, so I played in round two, drew, got matched up against blue black again. Two rounds later, lost.
To the douche.
I don't know if he was a douche.
Come on, that guy was a douche. He was just like, every time you did something, he gave you the fucking eye roll.
Yeah, he did like...
I mean, seriously, this guy was a douche.
It kind of was.
You mean a hardcore control player.
Yeah, like you could tell
that
he was...
Well, those are synonymous, but in addition to this, like...
He was especially douchey.
It was just like he was... Like this elitist fuck. Like I mean,
well, what he was doing is he was playing very quickly. Like he wanted to make sure that we were going to finish our match, which I respect and understand. Yeah. And I was trying to match his pace, and I was doing the best that I can. But you could tell that like once he started to get ahead, he just had this like this attitude of like, why aren't you just conceding? And like everything I did, he just went like, okay.
Like I said, right. He gave you the fucking eye
like,
roll every time
like,
you did something.
Shrug his shoulders and be like, all right. Whatever, like just kind of like
you gave you the caddy.
Like, what? I'm not just gonna fucking concede to you. Like, we're gonna play these games out. Oh man, it was really like after the match, though.
He ruled you, though.
And yeah, I didn't like
it. It wasn't even close. I mean,
it's such a hard matchup.
Yeah.
It's just really hard. And then
you know what I think that would be an awesome card, and I keep thinking that people should be playing this more, especially like in like these control matchups.
Mm-hmm. Choke.
No, well, yes.
Can't they reprint choke?
Oh, now it totally is escaping the name of it. But the black and four sorcery where you has Convoke and you can...
you can name a card and rip it out of their hand and library?
Deck and library and graveyard?
Like Stain the Mind.
Stain the Mind, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Got it.
Cole,
I got one! Ding, ding, ding! Episode 40.
Comes out and just pulls out the...
Got it.
Oh, my God.
Card name.
But that
All
would
right.
be like against like some of those decks.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, say you're playing, like, that Sultai control deck, right? You're like, oh, I name,
man, if
like,
I can name, like, Dissolve.
Ugin. I just know.
Or you just name a win condition.
Seriously, they only have, like, you know.
They usually have two ways
playing,
of
like,
winning, though.
They've been playing Ugin, Pearlake Ancient, and Silengar.
Okay, but take, like, blue-black
control.
You only
get one of those.
Like
I'd
got,
rather take out, like, Perilous Vault.
Yeah, take out
Perilous
Vault.
Like,
that might be good enough.
Even Dissolve. I'd rather just
or
take
like
out
dig
Dissolve
through time,
so I can
they
just
can't
kill
reload.
Them before I can do anything.
Yeah. If you take out Dig Through Time, actually, they might
but,
be pretty...
You know, I mean, if you say, like, Ugin or, like, Ashiok, they really don't have very many ways to kill you.
Yeah, they only need one, though. They don't.
I know, but I mean, like, there
just
aren't that many...
You just cut down the draw steps. But I think if you cut down more, like, I think, as Evan, you're trying to point out, if you cut down more of a utility spell out of those decks...
Well,
really
with the first one, you name Dissolve. With the second one, you name...
Yeah, the first one you name Dissolve.
Vault,
rip out
can't
the counter.
Because it feels like if you like paired that with, say, Thoughtseize, and then, say, like turn six or seven
Actually,
or something, or
say
whatever, you go, I Thoughtseize you. And if they counter it or they don't counter it, right, then you lead in with your Stain the Mind right afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Like, you save your, like... Your discard for the moment when you really want to cast that. And the thing is that, like, with your thing, you can actually convoke it, too. Like, I mean, you have enough creatures, like, you know, not a ton, but you have just enough. Yeah, but like...
None of them stays on the board except for Corsair Crucifix.
But you have things like...
And only for a couple turns.
You have things like, you know, Elspeth, where you could tap three of them.
If fucking Elspeth's going to resolve, come on.
That's true.
If Elspeth resolves, like, I'm in good shape anyways. Yeah. I mean, they can still Perilous Vault it.
Yeah.
It's a very hard matchup. I think the best way to deal with it is exactly what Team TCG player did in Grand Prix Memphis over the weekend, which I think we're going
to
talk about.
We'll get
later.
To Act 3, yeah. Well, definitely. We'll talk about it.
But moral of the story, so the day was fine. I actually felt like my opponents were getting the wrong side of variance all day. Like, a lot of people were mulliganing against me or, you know, having mana problems or
Welcome
whatever.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Although I did have one game where my opponent stumbled on mana, but I kept a hand. He was playing red-white. Yep. I punted against one red-white deck that I was like, I should have won that match, but I just punted. I was dumb. I played against this one guy who was very good. It was the very last round. We were both very excited to be done with the day.
Yeah, as you are.
And it was basically the winning in for the $50 of store credit.
Nice.
So we were both kind of like, felt like we had to be there. But so it was like game three, you know, post sideboard and everything. I know he's still got all his little dudes in, so I, you know, sideboard in my Drown and Sorrows and my fourth Bile Blight and whatnot. Mm-hmm. In case you haven't picked up by now, I was playing the Abzan mid range control. Mew, mew, mew. I don't know why I needed to mew, mew, mew there. But
suddenly he's a kitty.
I believe it's Abzan.
Yeah.
It is literally listed Abzan mid-range control, mew, comma, mew, 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 mew.
Yeah.
That's the delineation of Abzan we've gotten to 4 months into current standard. It's now we're on
mew, mew, mew is Abzan without the caryatids, which is what I was playing.
Yes.
But I kept a hand that was no green sources.
Wow.
It was like Temple of Silence, Urborg, and a Plains.
Okay.
And then I had like Thoughtseize, Bile Blight, Drown in Sorrow.
Nice. Seems good.
So I was like, I guess I'll just sit here and wait. And it was awesome. It just destroyed everything he played. And then by the time I got to untap and play a thing, it was Elspeth and he lost. It was great.
How good is Drown Sorrow right now in the format?
Oh, it was awesome. And I thought season when I saw his hand, I'm like...
Oh, no.
I like, whatever, took his Stormbreath Dragon. I'm like, good luck, buddy. I think I drew a second Drown in Sorrow in like the first couple turns, too. I was like, oh, this is great.
That sounds dirty.
I drowned in
Sorrow.
You know
what's really dirty?
Soulfire Grandmaster or something like that. Just like, pff, whatever.
One for one.
Just kill it. I'll get a scrying.
You got the scry. That's what's dirty about it.
Yeah.
Scrying afterwards is so like, kill your board. And what do we got on top here? Push that to the bottom.
That was like
go.
That was like my favorite card in Theros, which was the Sea God's Revenge.
It's oh
like
yeah,
blue and five sorcery, return three creatures to your hand. Scry one.
Yeah,
it's like so the god like fucks you in the ass, and everything goes away, and I'll get to scry one.
Oh, this is great. I get to set up my next turn.
So salty. Salty one. Look at the top card. Choose to keep it on top. Put it on the bottom.
I'm gonna be so. Oh boy, I'm gonna be so sad when Scry goes away.
Yeah, it's
man.
Great.
Scry lands. The night before the tournament, I was trying so hard to figure out how I could fit 12 Scry lands into the deck, but I just like I needed the black mana. I just couldn't not have 19 sources of black mana when you're playing Bile Blight, Hero's Downfall, and Drown in Sorrow. And especially, you know, against aggressive decks, you need that Drown in Sorrow, that Bile Blight as ASAP. You can't futz around.
Like
a lot of the decks, I got real familiar with the mana bases in these Abzan decks. So the way the decks have been doing their mana is like 4 Sandstep Citadel, 4 Temple Silence, 4 Temple of Malady. Those are the white-black and black-green lands.
And Urborg.
1 Urborg, 2 Caves of Kolos, and 3 the green-black pain lands.
Llanowar Wastes.
Llanowar Wastes. So I actually cut the third Llanowar Wastes for a second Urborg because I really wanted to
get that.
So, and it also just makes it cleaner. It's 4-4-4-2-2-2. Just like looks nicer.
Because that's important.
I don't know. Really, it made me happy.
Speaking of mana, Larry, you played an extra land in your deck and couldn't seem to draw it. Is that correct?
I played the red-white with a very controlling sideboard. And so I played a 25th land. And actually played a land in my sideboard.
That's right. You played a Windscar Crag in your sideboard too.
And
Windscar Crag. Let's talk about that.
It's not a card. I know it's maybe a card. What is it? Windscar Heist?
That's what it's called. Windscar Crag.
Is it Windscar Crag?
What the fuck? I don't even know what we're talking about.
Is it? It's the gain land. Remember, he showed our sideboard last week, and you're like, "Why are you playing this?" And he's like, "Well, I play a control sideboard." And I need to sideboard in a 26 land. And you're like...
There's no way it's called Windscarred Crag.
I think it is.
That's what it's called.
I could be mixing it up with Rootbound Crag, which is the Groll.
Yeah, I'm hearing a mix of Rootbound Crag and Windswept Heath.
So, anyhow,
anyway.
I played with 25 lands in the main deck, and I double mulliganed 5 times.
Wow.
It was really.
That's frustrating.
It was so boo.
Yeah.
I was just like, it's very frustrating. Like, and to play, like I said, to even play like one more land than the stock list.
Yeah, exactly. It's
and
really
still not draw it. Ugh.
Bummer. How'd you feel about the deck overall, though?
I liked the deck a lot. And I actually really, really liked the controlled sideboard. Like, it, I mean, it felt really, really great when I like did it against like other red white decks. Because, so here's the funny thing. So I played
it's great
7 rounds.
Next level against your Abzan opponents, too.
Yep, yep. So in I played seven of the 8 rounds, mm-hmm. and then I just left because I was 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And so I played red white, red white, red white, red white, Jeskai, which is red white with blue.
Yeah.
Then I played one non red white deck, and then I played another red white. So basically, man. 6 out of the 7 decks were red-white.
Well, it's good to know that I called the metagame correctly. Too bad I got matched up.
Blue-black, blue-black.
Yeah, I did play against Jeskai Tokens. That was a rout. I actually played against Jeskai Tokens twice, and it was a rout both times in my favor, because I'm dope.
Yeah. Those were the two I beat.
But, I do feel like the two Jeskai Tokens players I was playing against were not the best.
It's Windscarred Crag.
Right. Okay.
Sorry.
It just sounds wrong.
It feels like to me like that deck is got like such a I don't know the right word, but it's like it's so polarized. Either it's like it's insanely good or just like
terrible.
Terrible. Like, you know, like it seems like, you know, like the draws are either great. We're talking about the Jeskai tokens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it just, it, like they go crazy and they just make all this shit and they just rout you. Or you, like, they sit there and they're like, you know, at the end of turn, they're like, because like one of the games I beat the guy, it was so awesome. I was like, it was the time I was 2-0 and I played this guy for the 3-0 spot and I beat him. So I went 3-0 and then I went 3-4.
Ugh.
It was
beautiful.
Terrible. So, he's sitting there with like 3 mana open, and I've got my Rabble Master, and I knew he was playing the Jeskai tokens, and I'm like, I don't think I want to attack with my Rabble Master because I think he's just going to cast Raise the Alarm and then double block. So I'm like, I'll just make a dude and swing with my 2 dudes, and he's like sitting there thinking. He's like, okay. So the next turn he does nothing again. I'm like, so I just said to him, I said, I'm not swinging my Rabble Master into your Raise the Alarm. So I attack with everything, and he's like, oh, fuck it. So he goes double Raise the Alarm, and he's like, block, 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 block.
Oh, and all the tokens.
And all the tokens. And he's like, it was so awesome. It was like just a precious
sick
moment.
Sick read.
Yeah, it was really good.
Nice.
I had one opponent who, at the end of my turn, aimed to stoke the flames at my Siege Rhino, and then just untapped and went, and then stopped and looked at me and said,
oh, no.
I don't know why I did that. And then just kept playing, and I was like, all right.
that is
fair
that
enough,
is the worst.
Dude.
I bet that's happened like 48,000 times this standard season. Like,
I
how many people have not
why I
just
did
like
that.
Didn't think it through and stoked the flames of the Seed Rhino?
You know what's a really good thing I saw from watching a bunch of the things we're going to talk about?
Yeah.
That, but I just want to like touch on it because we're talking about like the cute Rabble Master thing.
Yeah.
As I think it's really cool when, say, like the red white guy plays and he plays his Rabble Master and then he attacks with a token. Then the next turn, he makes another token and say he went first and the Abzan guy leaves up a black, a white, and a green.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just sitting there. And I absolutely love, in the same vein of like not attacking my Rabble Master into that, I love the guys who it was, and I believe it was like, I think it was like Owen Turtenwald or Ben Stark or one of those people was just like, he's like, I'll just make a dude and I'll attack, but not with my Rebel Master because I'm not going to give you the chance to Abzan charm it.
Yeah.
So,
yep. And when you're the Abzan player, you got to suck it up and draw your 2 cards.
Yep.
I hope you get a Hero's Downfall or a Bile Blight.
So that's really cool. Like, so he keeps his position, right?
Yeah.
And then the guy has to spend his end of his turn also to just spend 2 life to draw 2 cards.
Yeah.
You mean has the privilege of drawing 2 cards.
Well, I mean, instead of like just killing your Rabble Master, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a lot of next level play, which we'll get to in Act 3.
Or the next level where you have two of them in your hand and you draw the two cards and then they attack the next turn and you kill their stupid rabble master.
Ooh, fire. Shots fired.
Boom. Have some.
That feels good.
Speaking of blowing people out with three mana as they attack you, this week's Cracksack or Barry are actually three mana removal spells. Ba-ba-da-ba. Wow.
Brought to you by Trident. Mouthwash.
Trident Mouthwash just dropped us as a sponsor after that sterling intro.
Man, when are we going to get that MailChimp money? So thanks, Cole, for ruining my intro. This week on Crack, Sack, or Bury, the segment where we take three cards on a theme, choose one we want to crack, we're going to open it, we're going to be...
How about that for like ruining
a,
your intro?
Much like a beer, we will be happy to drink that baby down. One we want to sack, we're happy to play it, but we'll sacrifice it if we have to. And one we want to bury, if it gets destroyed, we won't regenerate it.
What are you, fucking Boris Carr?
That's that that's that Abzan view.
I'm just doing it in the fashion of old-timey radio shows.
Well, and you had such a good segue into the three mana.
Yeah, well, it's not the fucking intro, Larry. It's not the official intro. I did not make up this segment hijacked by glamour.
Are you saying you didn't make it up, or
I didn't make it up
for this?
For this reason that I'm trying to describe right now.
What's our crack sack of bear this
week?
So this week,
like you said, we're doing three mana removal spells in Furf, which is the furry version of Fate Reforged. Three mana removal spells. Yes. I don't think they're all instants.
They are not.
Only some of them are. We're going to do... Are they all common?
They're all common.
They're all common. That's good. I'm just going to trust you and go right into this headlong. The first one is Bathe in Dragonfire. Two in a red for... A red sorcery, I assume.
Yeah,
Bathe's the sorcery. Deal four damage to target creature.
Yeah,
it just deal four damage to target creature.
Yep.
I feel like there's more text on this card.
Flavor text.
There's a lot of flavor text. Yeah.
Okay, I just look at a block of text and I. Okay. We also have Douse and Gloom, which is two and a black for an instant. Deal two damage to target creature.
I think that one's this.
It's an instant.
Okay, yeah. Creature.
So I played it like the first at the pre-release.
Does it hit players?
No,
just only creatures.
Okay.
But the first
gain two life.
The first three times I played it at the pre-release, I played it as a sorcery, and I was like, "Oops,
you can do that." No, you can do that.
You can, but I felt stupid though.
Good. And lastly, we have Sandblast, which is two and white for an instant, deal five. Damage to target attacking or blocking creature, right? Oh, great. Awesome. Cool. Sweet.
There you go.
So for not knowing what these were, you just rocked it out.
I know what they are. This was the very first Crack Sackenberry that I came up with for this.
We've been actually waiting to do this Crack Sackenberry for like since the set came out. We're like, no, we have to hold it. These are like some of the three best commons. They're only like five commons that you can really talk about in this set. So we got to hold off on our good common cycle.
God, yeah. Like the card quality drops so quick.
Well, these
it's
are
rough.
Like
look, we only got like another month.
We actually only have another week before previews come out.
Jeez.
That's why I'm glad we're doing these premium commons now. So,
I'm just glad this crap is running by.
All right. So
I could really go for some Theros block drafts right now.
Yeah, that would be nice. I could go for that. It would be good pound cleanse.
I'm going to go first.
Do it.
Screw y'all. I'm going to crack Sandblast.
So the Abzan player says, like Sandblast.
Douse and Gloom is black.
Yes.
I like Sandblast. I think it's the most powerful. Bathe does a lot of damage. Sandblast does more. It's a little more...
Damage. That's hashtag analysis.
It's a little more situational, but I mean like... You can lose. So basically, you're put in a situation where if you want to attack, if you want to just like Bathe lets you kill a thing, then get in.
Mm-hmm.
It also kills like utility creatures that just kind of sit there and don't.
Yeah,
like that Abzan Beastmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because they're never attacking with that thing. So
that's true.
That's really
or some
bad.
Outlast dude that they like put a counter on and it sits back.
That is true. All right. That's some food for thought.
But that's why they're different.
Yeah, that's why they're different.
Yeah.
I think I have a preference for white in this format as well.
Just me.
It's not the most overdrafted color by a mile.
Jeez. It's a lot of hostility aimed at someone who you agree with.
Look, we're just knocking you because you're clearly the opposite boy in the room.
I'm a red player at heart. I just like Siege Rhino. Siege Rhino's a red card. Siege Rhino does all the things I want it to do.
All right. And then what's
look,
your...
I want to control people, but I'm not good enough to play blue cards.
Okay.
Sandblast, great. 5 damage. Most damage. Five damage is most damage.
Boom.
I don't care that it's attacking or blocking. I mean, you might not be able to get those utility creatures like you were saying, but whatever. Screw it. What I really want to get rid of is the stupid big beef dudes that
Snow
get in my way.
Horn Rider. Yeah.
Kills all that entire cycle of dudes. The only thing it doesn't kill of note is like...
stuff that you're going to lose to anyway.
Saga Muller.
6-7.
The 6-7, there you go.
Woolly Locks.
Woolly Locks on, that's my boy.
I get a bagel with Woolly Locks on it in the morning, and it morphs up into a great dump.
Sure, that Locks isn't a little old. Got some mold
on it.
Got
some wool on it.
And then I'm gonna sack Bathe and Dragonfire. Bathe, 4 damage is the second most damage.
5 is greater than 4 is greater than 2.
Okay, great.
I would rather have the 2 extra damage than the gain 2 life, basically, is what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little consideration here for I like black a little more than red in this format, but not enough to take Delson Gloom over Bathe and Fire, so Delson Gloom is my berry.
But nice. you do gain life from the douse, too.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, I'm just saying, but that...
Are you trolling me right now? Is that what this is? Delson Gloom does pump up your Johnny's Pride mates, now that you mention it.
Sweet.
Sweet modern tech.
Also, like Delson Gloom, you can just play Harsh Sustenance. You'll probably get at least 2 damage out of it, and you can hit them in the face with it.
Yeah, but you have to play like 2 colors, though.
Yeah, but what are you going to play?
Wait, it's black and white, so of course you're playing those anyhow.
I really feel judged right now.
Larry, what do you think?
I think I agree.
Really? After the whole rigmarole.
All the harsh judgment.
Jesus. Who's the asshole now?
That's me. I actually kind of like Bathe and Dragonfire a lot, except for that I'm not particularly a big fan of red.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's the biggest issue. I just do like the utility of just going to, like, you know, destroying anything and not having to wait for them to do it. But
really, the guy playing red, white, and standing like the Bathe and Dragonfire.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
All right. Wow, okay, I guess that's to me.
Screw it up, Cole.
I'm going to go Sandblast Crack. I got to agree. White's good. I do have considerations, though, of overdrafting white. So, you know, but at the same time, if I see this card in the first 3 picks... I'm probably taking it and taking it as a signal that there's some play to white. If there are like still uncommons in the pack and things like that, or some uncommons are taken, I don't know. It's super hard to read this format because, like, you know, the rare is always gone when you get past the pack, and then you got to like count how many uncommons there are as that kind of goes on. But I put Doomblast. No, not Doomblast. What is it called?
Sandblast
is pretty high. 5 is the most damage.
5 damage is most damage.
Plus, it's just like it's
5 it's, is greater than 4. Is
it's a real good upgrade to what's the one that it kills them only on attacking?
Kill shot.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
The one that kills them on the kill shot.
Yeah, you know, the attacking kill shot.
Kills
I feel
only
like
on attacking.
What I love about the Sandblast is the versatility, and that is it's not just a defensive card, and that really allows it to play in Mardu decks, allows it to play in Jeskai decks, whereas Killshot kind of only has that home in the Abzan decks. So definitely Sandblast. Like, the versatility usually isn't an issue. Then I'm going to disagree with you guys. I'm going to go Douse and Gloom as my sack.
Guess someone's got to do it.
Someone's
got to be wrong.
Part of it is that I don't like red in this format. In fact, what I tried to do, Larry, setting up stream of you, is by the end of pack one, I just kind of tried to make a hard push into playing 4-color, no red. And that's why I ended up in this like big kind of control Abzan Sultai, or like Sultai splash, like white splash. Like, I ended up splashing a little red just for my Temur, or my Snowhorn Riders, just so I could like have a little bit more late game threat, and I ended up being able to play like the three mountains without hurting my mana base. But yeah, I feel like red is just really Bathe and Dragonfire is one of those premium kind of commons in red that you want to definitely build your red decks out of, and that's why you can see them. Hopefully you can get a couple in your deck, but at the same time, if I don't have something better than this, like I really need a, like a premium red creature, like I'd almost be happier if I saw Goblin Heel Cutter and this guy. I might lean to the Heel Cutter around this.
I'd probably take Heel Cutter too, but
yeah, I think so.
But that's a different Cracksacker Berry.
That is a different Cracksacker Berry, and it, but it's just saying that like red is so not deep that, you know, in that first pack, there are maybe other red cards that I want to be taking earlier than this, so I can't define it really as putting into my sack or my crack.
The one thing I do like...
Just because red is bad.
The one thing I really do like about...
I think you should put it in your crack.
Yeah.
Keep it away from your sack.
Yes.
You don't want to get bruises.
Okay.
You can put it in your crack.
So the one thing I do like, and I almost would have changed the order, is just that there are tons of morphs and
that's what I was about to get to with Douse and Gloom, is that actually there are a lot of X2s in the format that it hits really nicely. I rarely don't have a target for it within the first five turns of the game. Now, after that, sure, it probably downgrades a little bit. It's not as great right off the top of the deck, but the early play with it is invaluable. Just to be able to like play a morph, they've played a morph, then you don't play a morph, you just douse their guy, and you eat. It's a tempo play. And the game life is good. It allows you to attack. If they don't offer the trade, then if they kick back on you, you've got the two life cushioning from getting hit by their morph or manifest. It just got a little more play than I think you expect. Plus, black is... I really like being in black right now. I mean, I just like... I feel like I'm either in black, green, or red, white.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's where I'm at.
All right.
I think one interesting thing, talking about red not being super deep in this format, one of the problems I've had with... I feel like red ends up being open a lot, and I will kind of like catch on to that towards the end of pack one. But by the time you jump in, all the good red cards are still gone.
Yeah, and you're the cards you end up around them again.
Yeah, the cards you end up getting are just not that great, and you kind of just have to rely on pack three to pay out and like hope the guy to your right maybe isn't in red. And if the guy to your right is in red, like you're in big trouble.
You're done.
That's how my draft went on Friday.
Basically, yeah.
I've got a little resentment. This is the second time I've drafted red and just like had the other time I drafted, I got like a red black deck. It was bad.
Some of the red decks can cards. Be,
my red black deck was pretty
there
good.
There can be one good red deck at the table, but there can only be one
there
good
be,
red
there
deck
can be
at
two.
The table.
Mm.
Was this like fucking Highlander?
I feel like there can only be one like straight red deck.
Like base.
Right. Okay, Duncan.
Base red.
Duncan McLeod.
Look, I'm
there can only be one.
So, Larry, you were in red, right?
I was. Like,
and he had the best red deck
at
the table. And he was the
red,
most upstream of everybody. I think so.
Javier probably had the best one.
Javier was more black-white.
Okay.
He was just like splash red.
Screw that
His red was all just Mardu stuff. I don't think it was anything.
He had a Aerostorm. I did get that off of Villainous Wealth.
Oh, wow.
But that was like... I mean, I think the rest of it was Mardu stuff. No, he had a Goblin Heel Cutter, maybe.
How'd he get an Aerostorm when I had three of them?
There was like, probably a fourth.
I literally, it comes, I'm like, wee, take another one. Wee.
Well, yeah, he was sitting, I think he was sitting a little upstream of you, Evan, right? I don't know, I don't quite remember, but.
Wasn't he downstream of me?
He was downstream of
me. I think he was downstreaming, but he,
so he was like sitting across from you, like across the table from you.
Or he was pretty much black-white.
Yeah. He was right next to you, though.
Mm-hmm. Actually, no, he had some good red cards, because he also had a, what's the make through goblins?
Hordling Outburst,
yeah. Which, anyways.
I had all the mediocre red cards, and you guys had all the good red cards, is basically what happened.
Basically, there were two people who had good red cards, and then two people who had terrible red cards.
I was so psyched to get, like, a Valley Dasher or whatever the hell. I was like, oh, man, I can play this too. This wasn't even the Barrage of Boulders deck I drafted.
Yeah.
I had two Barrage of Boulders in my deck and four Gorswine.
Oh,
jeez. On Friday?
Yeah.
Man.
Well, because that's like when I said like I took the Teemer Kitty Cat.
Yeah.
And then the third card, there was literally nothing in the pack but a Gorswine. And I'm like, all right, I'll take that.
Yeah.
And then the next card came Gorswine. And the next card game, Gorswine. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm red.
Yeah.
My deck was miserable.
But, I mean, red-white seems like a pretty good place to be right now. It definitely seems to be a pretty good place to be in standard, which is like getting circling back that around to...
Red-white does not seem like a great place to be in limited, but I see why you're trying to make that segue, so I'll allow it.
Okay.
Just want to make sure no one thinks we're idiots.
All right, moving on. Act
they probably
three.
Do. It's okay.
The listeners were like, is that really real, or was he just like, trying to do it?
That's where the reality seeps in, everybody. Yeah, we had a bunch of events this last weekend. Can we just start this conversation out? I guess this is where I want to start.
Here it comes.
Standard, best format right now, or bestest format right now? I mean, limited is meh, we can kind of say. Modern kind of has this huge schism between the pros and the regular players.
Well, I think the greatest format is Legacy Cube Draft Online, if we want to get right down to it.
I would argue greatest format
so,
is Cube.
Owen Turtenwald wrote an article. I want to pull this up. You say what you're going to say. I'm going to pull this up because this will be a good laugh.
Boy,
it relates to what
you're
saying.
I tell you, though, this week was awesome.
Yeah.
I have spent... the last 3 days just sitting on my couch watching all the Twitch and
all the coverage.
It's like, I'm not even through it all yet. Like, wow. I'm only like halfway through the modern
been some of your highlights? This was a great weekend for Magic.
Yeah, because like. there was Grand Prix Memphis.
There's Grand Prix Memphis and SCG LA.
Then there was Grand Prix Vancouver.
There was Grand Prix Vancouver Modern.
And the other one that was kind of interesting, and I just watched it because it was there. I didn't watch that one as fully, but there was the Scandinavian Open.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
So, like,
the most beautiful Magic tournament.
They show all the, like, the pictures of, like, the site and everything. Oh, it's so beautiful there. Yeah. But anyhow, I like there's this website called mtgcoverage.com.
Yes, that's right. You were showing me this.
And I just love it because it has all of the each of the major events. Mm-hmm. So all these, like, you know, SCG,
all the GPs,
Channel Firebomb, all these things.
Events.
And they have all of the hyperlinks to everything.
Really?
And so instead of, like, you know, going to, like, Twitch TV and, like, going,
scrolling
and three, and then listening to, like, the bullshit little stuff in between.
Yeah.
It says, so, you know, here is round three. Right. And then it done. And then you can literally just close that tab and go back to the coverage. And then you can click
and
round four
pops up
and it just pops up a new window and it goes right to this. So I don't have to listen to, like, you know, LSV's
all the
bad
stuff,
puns,
like all the shuffling
and
time.
The shuffling. Yeah, exactly. It's really, really great.
Oh, that's great.
Of course, like I said, for like 3 days,
You've been binging.
Oh, my God. It's so awesome.
Yeah. So going back to your premise, Cole.
Yep.
You may be onto something. I think Legacy players will always argue that Legacy is the best format.
That's their right when they spend that much money on a deck.
That's fine. They're wrong, but that's okay. I understand.
Look, they spent a lot of money. They got a lot of room to defend. I get it.
That's true. Look, I understand. You have to have force of will to be able to play in the format and not just lose to unfair decks. And when you spend $1 million on your force of wills, you really want to make sure that...
they continue to be worth something.
Well, no, I think Legacy's fine. I just don't know much about it. But
it's just like we were talking about earlier about how, like, you know, all the pros are writing about how much they hate Modern and blah, blah, blah.
That's been coming out a lot this week on Twitter.
It's just been very interesting that in the past, Modern's been looked at as a really healthy, awesome format, whereas Standard's been like a problem over and over and over again. But Standard's probably the healthiest it's been in a long, long time, and people are also kvetching about Modern. Which leads into this great article that Owen Turnwald wrote for Channel Fireball. I think it actually came out on Saturday. Best and worst formats of all time.
Okay.
So please hold your applause until the end of the list.
This is our Oscars right here.
So this is the best. Number 5, Holiday Cube Draft.
Yeah.
Number 4, Return to Ravnica / Theros Standard. This is the standard, mind you.
Where he had mono black and won like a billion things?
Yeah, where it's basically just mono black.
He pack ratted
like
himself
blue white
like
control.
Three Pro Tours through a season.
Yeah, and like came in like, you know, won like two
probably
GPs and like came in second of
yeah
a.
His
best Pro Tour season.
And also the standard format that was like reviled by.
Yeah, I would argue with that. That was like two decks.
This is why this is funny. Number 3 is Legacy. Okay. Number two is Innistrad Draft.
All right.
And number one is Team Sealed. Isn't that nice?
Team Sealed's a lot of fun.
And then the five worst. Standard with Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
number four is just Modern.
Just the format.
number three is Fate Reforged Draft.
Okay. You can buy that.
Number two is Holiday Cube Sealed.
Oh, interesting.
Draft is great. Sealed is stupid because, you know, it's just like...
Just a pile of cards.
A pile of moxes.
Good luck.
number one is worst of all time is Avacyn Restored Sealed.
As Yorick has attested on this podcast, that was a tremendous waste of his life.
Yeah, and I think this is more of like his personal sort of like just how he feels about these formats, not necessarily like the health of them. I mean, like
the way he feels about Modern is the way a lot of pros feel about Modern. To circle back to what you were saying, Larry, there definitely is a schism between a lot of like local players, players who not pros who are really invested in Modern, who fought for this Modern GP. And then the backlash, this Modern Pro Tour, and then the backlash after the Pro Tour of all the pros kind of crapping on the format right now and saying that's not a great format. And then the infights between the pro communities about whether or not it's a healthy format for them to play.
You got
to
come up with your cute word that came up.
It's the battle of the pros versus the Joes.
That's so awesome.
You know? And there's a lot of pros who think it's an unhealthy format, and then it's too much of a roulette game with the metagame calls, and that there isn't enough kind of action in the format, which is exactly the inverse that we're seeing in Standard, where metagame is like really important, and like there's a lot of nuance right now to the format. I think there's more nuance to this Standard format than we've seen since Return to Ravnica Innistrad Standard, you know, like 2 years ago when Jund was a player. You know, now you could play all these colors, there's all these decks. So we had like two big events, as Larry, you were watching. We had SCG LA, where Ivan Jen, a friend of the podcast, he was on the show back. He does not warrant a burp.
He doesn't deserve that. I apologize.
He finished 25th, and that's why he doesn't warrant a burp.
I came in 25th.
Yeah, but you played in a tournament with less people. And
that's true. That is true. It was only 8 rounds.
And he was playing the Jeskai Ascendancy combo.
He was playing the same deck that he won an SCG Open with. And if you want to listen to that podcast, we had it.
Do we have a deck list available?
It's just the standard stuff where, like, you know...
I'm sure he has some tweaks.
Things have changed. I know he has
It's pretty much this almost the same thing he was running before, like, you know, except for, like, you know, add, like, a...
Well,
like
he was
Treasure
doing
Cruise
all that,
or like, you know, whatever.
He was doing all that like heroic stuff, using the heroic creatures to generate tokens. I'm curious if he went like a route that would like more similar to the Jeskai tokens list, but just with the infinite combo in it.
Not really. No, it looks like it's mostly the combo deck. I mean, he can just kill you with like, you know, making a bunch of dudes and like them getting bigger.
Yeah, I guess you can't bounce a token and recast it.
Yeah, that doesn't work so well.
That doesn't work so good.
We also had another local player, Shen from Versus Games. He finished third with Obzon. Great finish by him. It was freaking amazing. And he was playing a list similar to you, Evan, kind of an Obzon Walkers list.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it that. But
okay.
Well, whatever, Obzon control, mid-range. He was playing like probably, four to five cards off of the 75 I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
The same sort of creature split, creature planeswalker split that we've been seeing, of like 4 Siege Rhino, 4 Coursers, 1 Tassiger, no Caryatids.
Yep.
And then
3
Elspeth, 1 Lily, and 2 Sorin.
2 Sorins.
No Ugin's in the main?
No Ugin's in the main.
Yeah, that there's like, and then the like removal suite is basically the same. The one I've been seeing, which is probably what he played. I'm going to see if I can get off the top of my head.
All right.
4 Abzan Charm.
Yep.
3 Bioblight.
2.
2. That's a flex spot. 3 Heroes Downfall.
Yep.
1 Murderous Cut.
1 Utter End.
1 Utter End.
And 1 Murderous Cut.
And 1 Murderous Cut.
Okay.
And 2 Read the Bones, 2 End Hostilities.
And?
Creatures?
No, come on. This is like the card that's dominated Standard for about 2 years.
Elkbeck?
No. 1 mana.
Shocky.
Oh, Thoughtseize, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. We don't even have to say it.
4 Thoughtseize.
4 Thoughtseize. Yeah, that was exactly. That's a spell suite.
Yeah, and then it's just a sideboard full of, like, probably a bunch of Glare and Heresies, a bunch of Drown and Sorrows, and, like.
Actually, so it's, 3 Drowns, 3 Glares, 2 Reads.
That counts as a bunch.
Yeah, it's a bunch.
And then just like probably
a one of everything else.
Yeah, just like a bunch of Planeswalker, like whatever you want to do to go big to deal with mid-range.
It's actually a lot more, like he's got a Bioblight, a Murderous Cut, an Utter End, and then Tassigur, Ajani, Nissa, Ugin.
Yeah, there's usually a second Tassigur in there too.
I do not like Ajani.
Yeah, I ended up taking Ajani out of my sideboard. But I feel like a lot of those, like when you're just doing the like, this is my mid-range go big plan, they're kind of interchangeable. Like you just land a big thing and you just beat each other until something happens. But yeah, it's not the most nuanced strategy. Like
that is it in a nutshell.
You throw haymakers until one of them connects.
Yeah.
This actually segues nicely into
so we also had
Grand Prix Memphis.
We had GP Memphis too,
and we had four members of Team TCG player make it into the top eight with this Obzon mid-range control and the sort of tech that they brought. And when I came home, when I woke up Sunday morning, turned on the Grand Prix, I got home at like 1 in the morning on Saturday night after the PTQ because I had to take Caltrain home. It's a fucking nightmare.
I'm surprised you made it home.
Yeah, it's fine. The Caltrain train left San Jose at 10:30. I got home at like 1. I walked in the door because I like
insane.
Caltrain took like hour and a half to
2 hours.
Hour and 45 to get into the station. Then all the buses are done because it's like I just walked all the way home from like Transbay Terminal. I like stopped at Hotel Utah on the way because it was the like only place that had booze. I'm just like, just give me two shots. I'm just going to keep walking. I just like got my shots and left. I was like,
that's awesome.
It was a nightmare. So I woke up Sunday morning and just turned on coverage, and Brad Nelson was doing a deck tech. And I just like,
Brad a boy.
I saw his sideboard and I was like, that is perfect. That's like, at the end of the day, I found I was sideboarding in the second Tassigur every game. He had a second Tassigur in the main. He had cut the Planeswalkers down to just four Elspeths.
Yep.
Kind of like streamlined the removal suite.
Actually, three Elspeths.
What'd I say?
You said four.
Okay, yeah. That never happens. So I was wrong.
Can I read a sideboard?
Unless you're Craig Wesco playing that Naya monster thing.
That's nuts. Yeah. We can talk about all the other fun deck lists too. But
let me read a sideboard first. Brad Nelson, he played 1 Read the Bones, 3 Drown in Sorrow, 4 Fleece Mainline, 1 Erase, 1 End Hostilities, 3 Glare of Heresy, 2 Sorn.
Yeah, I love this.
So, wait. There's a big difference here. He's got 4 Fleece Mainline?
Yeah.
And this was, what do you think here? What?
So the plan is basically...
What's going on here?
So everybody else, they side out all their, like say Red White sides out like their lightning strikes, right? And then you put in kitties.
Oh.
And then like they play like a kitty and then he plays a Sorin and now he's like got like a kitty gaining life that they really can't kill because they took out all their like, their Chain of the Rocks. They took out their like...
No, they leave the Chain of the Rocks in.
Nobody takes out Chain of the Rocks.
They probably leave in Stoke the Flames and Chain of the Rocks. Yeah. I mean, like, Chain of the Rocks has to get rid of Siege Rhino. Like, you've got to deal with Siege Rhino.
Oh, that's true.
Like, I actually don't know what the sideboard plans are for these other decks. I'm just... Yeah. This is my worst... Sideboarding is what I'm terrible at. But I like this because it's drastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's transformative. It almost ignores what your opponent is doing. Almost. Not quite. Like, it is a metagame call of, like, you know, we think they're going to take out their lightning strikes or their bile blights or whatever, like whoever you're playing against. And then this just kind of lets you go under your opponent with the four Fleece Main Lions. And then against like control-y decks like blue black control, you just like, you gotta beat them before they
get 8 mana.
Before they, you know, get in control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And heaven forbid you get that thing to go monstrous too.
Oh yeah, it's so hard.
Like
to
the
lose.
Only thing they can do is basically like
perilous fault
it, right?
Yeah. When I was talking to my blue-black opponent at the end of our match, and I was, like, trying to...
The one that's scoffing at you?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, just talking about, like, what's the best way to deal with this matchup and stuff. And I was, like, saying, you know, I just want to land, like, 3 threats in a row and, you know, just try to, like, one of these will stick, and then you have to deal with all 3 of them. He's like, yeah, but then I just fault. I'm like, that's true. You can just wipe my board. You can play a spell that I have no way to interact with or get rid of. That's true. You can do that. But I can't do anything about that.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dad.
It's like when people take away, like, you do something really cool and you're proud of yourself, and you're like, yeah, well, I just blah, blah, blah.
I flooded.
Like, wow, you're great. Thanks. Yeah. You're right. I didn't do the thing I just did, you fucking ass.
Yeah. Not speaking of an ass, I don't know where this – we're at act three transitions to deal with me, people. the winner of GP Memphis came down to Ben Stark playing Red White, a deck not actually quite dissimilar from what you were playing, Larry, on Saturday. Playing
– Well, I mean, he does have one big thing is he had no Stormbreath main deck.
He's got no Stormbreath.
He's got four Soulfire Grandmasters main deck.
Exactly. Four Soulfire Grandmaster, which
and,
is really
and
interesting.
And four Siege Outposts.
Yeah, four Outpost Siege, which is like a card that's just starting to like jam four. I mean, that's kind of what the theory is now. Four Wild Slash, four Stokes, three Lightning Strikes, one Valorous Stance, four Outpost Siege, four Chain of the Rocks. How awesome. I just love that Chain of the Rocks is standard playable now.
Yeah.
It's just sweet. Super awesome.
It just,
this is about the only deck it's really good in, though.
Yep, this is its window.
Yeah.
It won't last for about another two more weeks because once Dragons comes out, I have a feeling it might disappear. We don't know.
No,
it's not going to go away.
We'll see. This deck will
only get better.
Yeah, I think the big problem before was you just couldn't get the power that you needed to do really well out of just red and white, and you can't play Chain of the Rocks in a three-colored deck. You know, you're just not going to have enough mountains.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the more cards come out, the more this will get more powerful. I mean, like...
I mean, you have people... I mean, and I was doing it too. I mean, you have people running a fucking Evolving Wilds just so that you can make sure you go and get your mountain if you don't have it.
You know what? It looks really smart, too.
It is. I mean, it's not like it's clever, like, because, I mean, it's been around for a while.
Yeah,
but
no one was playing Heliod's Pilgrims to go get their Chain of the Rocks.
Except for Sam Black. While back, that was like the first utterance where like Chain of the Rocks, people were like, this card
is a thing.
Is a thing.
I remember listening to a podcast with Mike Flores, him describing it was just Obzon with Heliod's Pilgrims, and it was like Obzon, but like sort of a constellation, like green black constellation, splashing white for Heliod's Pilgrim, Chain of the Rocks. And Siege Rhino, and then it would do Constellation, but play like Karamitra's Favor, or like the cantrip auras that attach to land and make it every land type.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then also Evolving Wilds, so you could like get mountains just so he could like abuse the power of Chain of the Rocks.
Well, what's his name? Tom Ross was playing his Soul Flare deck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was like, you know, this like four-color monstrosity thing, and he was playing like four Evolving Wilds or something and also playing Chain to the Rocks, too.
Nice. Oh, well, listen, guys, Path to Exile is a good card, and this is Path to Exile without getting them the land.
Yeah.
Just has the land requirement on you. But it was interesting to see Ben Stark's kind of spicy take on red-white aggro. What ended up winning was Sultai Control, which gets us back to kind of my thought that I had last week, which is, are these control strategies maybe the best thing to be doing in standard? It seems like these red-white decks have been making a good go of it. I mean, one SCG LA, but at the same time, these blue-black-based control decks seem to be still kind of dominant, popping up these top eights. Or Abzan control lists.
It's interesting because, like, I mean, you know, this is that never-ending snake-eating-its-own-tail cycle of aggro, you know, loses to mid-range, loses to control, loses to aggro. But the aggro right now isn't super aggro, and the control decks can kind of deal with it. And if they can make the game go long, which oftentimes they can, and I think the addition of green, which gives you cards like... he wasn't playing Course of Kruphix, which is interesting, but Sylvan Caryatid. He was playing Sylvan Caryatid and Satyr Wayfinder, which...
No.
He wasn't playing
Wayfinder. No.
Only Satyr Wayfinder. That's it.
Okay, you're right. My bad. He was playing Satyr Wayfinder and Rakshasa's Death Dealer in the sideboard, like three of them.
Really?
It kind of gives him some early game things to do.
Mm-hmm. But you know, like that guy, I don't know if you've been watching it, but that guy, Simon Gertsen, he's a really like famous...
Who's this?
Simon Gertsen. He's one of the commentators.
How does this relate to the thing? Oh, he's a commentator.
Because he was saying that like he just hates that card in the sideboard. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's a little wonky,
it's clunky. It doesn't do what it needs to do.
Rather just drown in sorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
What does he have in the main deck that kind of helps him out of green? Like Kiora a little bit?
Yes, he's played Kiora. You know, and so it's
this
funny.
This is Jack Fogle's Sultai control, yeah. To put us on there. I want to just read the list. So he's got Planeswalkers, two Ugin.
Two.
One Garruk, two Ashiok, two Kiora. He's got three Thoughtseize, two Crux of Fate, one Treasure Cruise. He's got four Bioblight, four Dig Through Time, two Disdainful Stroke, four Hero's Downfall, one Cut, three Sultai Charm, and four Wayfinder. So it looks like it's Sultai Charm, Satyr Wayfinder, and Kiora. Now, on his sideboard, he does have two Tasigurs, which seems kind of spicy with the Wayfinders.
Tasigurs? Just awesome.
I'm surprised that thing is not at least one of main deck.
I think he's probably made the room for the Planeswalkers, it looks like.
Yeah.
He's just running into the Planeswalker.
He just doesn't want to have, like, any creature. Like, I'll make your creature removal deck.
Yeah, exactly. Why give him an option? Just make their... why give Abzan Charm any outs?
Yeah, he's got plenty of ways to, like, make card advantage happen late in the game. He doesn't really need to...
The more and more I watch, like, even watching all of these things, I just really feel... And this is just a feeling, mind you, that I just think that almost Planeswalkers might be too good. Because they do multiple things, like they do recurring effects, and you know oftentimes they're expensive, but some of them aren't. Like you know you get like Ashiok, which is just like super cheap, right? You get Kiora, which isn't that expensive. Mm-hmm. And when I saw him like play the Kiora, he was nonstop like play Kiora, minus it, draw a card, play an extra land. That's all he was doing.
That's really good in a control deck. If that's all you want to do is play a land.
And then they were doing a little deck tech with him, or at least one of the people that was doing it. And he's like, so I drew a card, I got to play an extra land, and it bought me some life when they have to attack it. And if they don't, then he's like, I plus it and, you know, stop their one threat I bubble their threat for a turn. And then the next turn, I minus it again.
You explore.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really aggressively using those explorers. Like, he didn't care about the 9/9 Krakens at all. He was, you know, all about...
Never once even remotely went in that direction.
Because you've got an 8-mana Ugin. Why do you need a 9/9 Kraken?
That's true. Yeah, and between the Kioras and the Satyr Wayfinder, like, he, you know, just land city. Yeah. He's hitting those lands.
Well, what's interesting, though, is he's only playing 25 lands. So he's playing Satyrs and Kioras. To offset his low land count for a control deck, because a control deck probably wants to play at least two extra land there.
I mean, think of the Wayfinder as like kind of a land, right?
It's kind of that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's kind of using it to offset his low land count.
Well, 25 is not really low per se, right?
But for a control deck, you could see 27 in a lot of those lists.
Yeah, I mean, if you're you could keep two lands in a Wayfinder and like you're.
You're okay.
Not
you're
guaranteed,
gonna
but
you've turn. You're going
to
draw.
Got to be
land.
Able to get that third land. Yeah. Like if you don't, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
you're going to lose that game anyway.
And then you're
probably still mulligan that hand if you're playing control, but you know.
And then if that land is like a scry land to boot, right?
Yeah. You know, then it's maybe not a mulligan, especially if you got a bio blight in there too, and you know something.
No, I mean the land you hit. Yeah. Like a lot of times he'd have a scry land and a land.
Yeah, and he would take the scry.
And then he'd scry, and like if it wasn't a land, he'd ship the land. Then he'd play the Wayfinder, get the scry land, play the scry land. If it wasn't a land, he'd ship it. So like within like the first three turn or first two turns, he would see like 1, 2, 6 set like the top 8 cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
And
that's
then
pretty good.
And then it was awesome.
Way
it was
to
like,
sculpt your hand.
And then it was like, no matter what came across the board, like literally no matter what came across the board, he's like, block.
Yeah.
Block your token. Block your 1/1.
And he's like, okay, so now I got like another card in my graveyard for like, you know, all my delve stuff.
And I kind of time walked you because I got through that attack phase with you not dealing me any damage.
I gained 2 life.
Yep.
And yep.
It's interesting. He's got 2 Frieza's Cure on the sideboard too, just against. And I was actually thinking about a crack second berry. Like Douse and Gloom is almost good enough to be playing in these control decks, especially where you've got Rabble Masters running around and you do want to reach across the board and kill something and gain a couple life. Obviously, Freaky Curve for double black is a little bit better than the 3-mana Douse and Gloom, but...
Yeah, that deck's super sweet. I mean, that seems like the type of deck that people are going to run with. Like that seems like the type of deck that people really would love to play. I was playing
it's a pro's deck, right? Like that's the kind of
not a Joe's deck.
A Joe's deck. That's definitely a Joe's deck.
No, red white aggro or like red green monsters is a Joe's deck.
I don't know. Sultai Control is a pretty Joe deck. That's the type of deck that It's a control deck, but you get to use all these sweet planeswalkers. You get to do all this fun stuff. Like, the interactions are
super
sweet.
Let's reiterate this. This is the pros will do well with it.
Yeah.
The Joes will not.
The pros will just play blue-black control.
No, I don't think so, actually.
I think they'll probably play this list.
I think they will play this list, or they will play the Obzon control.
Well, see, the thing is, I don't feel like blue-black control is that much worse against the sort of aggressive decks of the format right now than this Sultai control deck, but it's way better at being control-y. I think the one thing this the blue-black deck is way better at being control-y, I think.
It's a little bit
hardcore. I think the green, the Sultai deck, one thing it has going for it is it really lets you hit your lands and power your lands out with Kiora and such.
But it's not wrathing the way that the
blue-black control decks. Yeah, it's not just Perilous Vault you over and over and over again.
I think the Sultai deck's better. I think it actually...
I'm going to side with
Larry. I think it looks more fun.
I mean, look, only time will tell, and we'll know in the next podcast or two what the pros adopt. But
I expect to see a lot of it at Versus is all I'm saying.
That's probably true, because control is really big in our local community here.
I was playing against a guy who I played from Versus, who I played in one of the rounds at the PTQ, and he just got flooded and or screwed and or mulliganed into nothing in all of our games. I just kind of crushed him, and he was a little dejected. So we played a couple games for fun afterwards, and he was playing a Sultai control deck. I was like, that deck looks super sweet. That must be a lot of fun to play. And he's like, yeah, it's really good. But he switched to this other like red green deck at the last minute.
When they were doing the deck techs.
Yeah.
It was so awesome. So the guy's like, so tell us like what you think about this. And they were doing the Sultai control.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, so I'm playing these cards that they've banned in every other format. and he goes, really? He goes, they banned them in every other format, so I'm playing the banned cards. It was so awesome just like to listen to him talk about it. It's just
man, he's true. He hit it right on the head. He's playing the banned cards.
He's playing a treasure cruise, right?
Yep.
He was playing four digs and two treasure cruise.
That guy.
That's really good with those Seder Wayfinders. If you're just treasure cruising now for one mana consistently on like
turn five.
How many
murder cuts were in the main?
Oh god, I gotta pull it all up again.
So
pull it up. Probably one or two.
So I actually do want to talk about like one of the decks, which is the when I was 3-0 at the PTQ, so I went into my fourth round and I played this guy who had this really unique red white deck, and he just spanked me.
Did it have like such outside of the box sleeper all-stars as Goblin Rabble Master and
Chain
of the Rocks?
I mean, yeah, it was unbelievable. No, but so the thing that was interesting about it was I'll just say a couple things that he had in his deck, and then between it and his sideboard, like when it kind of all came together, he was like, oh, you know what, I should have maybe played it this way to start with, right? So anyhow, one of the interesting things was that he was playing several the Soulfire Grandmaster, which I actually like because it's very similar to what Ben Stark was doing, so it's really relevant to speak about it.
Yeah.
So he was saying that like he felt like, you know, maybe he was playing like I think two, and maybe he said he wanted to play more. And I really liked that Ben Stark was playing with the four Outpost Siege.
Yeah.
And with the four Soulfire Grandmother, and they did a deck tech with him. And what he said was, he goes, so if I get multiple of these things going, I actually want to draw, I want to beat you quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the dragon is not going to beat you quickly. What's going to beat you quickly is my Seekers and my Soulfire Grandmasters.
Yeah, just.
And add to that, when I have the Outpost Siege, I want to be drawing active, cheap cards. So if I have like two sieges going, right, or just a siege, if I draw a utility card and then another utility card at the same time, I want to cast both of them, right? I don't want to like just have my card that I drew for free go to waste. And if I draw a dragon, well, I'm not going to, right? Because I loved how he thought. So anyhow, flash back to this event. So the guy I was playing had so four Seekers, and he also had four Eidolon of the Great Revel.
Ooh, spicy.
baby.
So what was interesting is, and he had a couple of the Soulfly Grandmaster. So yeah. Listen to this combination of stuff you get going.
I see where you're going with this.
So he goes, turn two. So first of all, he beats me in two games, like thrashes me. But
didn't you have one game where he just played three Eidolons like in three turns against you?
So he goes Temple, Mountain, Eidolon.
Yep.
Temple, Eidolon, Temple, Eidolon.
Okay.
So that's what he drew on the first game.
Things are scary.
And that's what he did the exact second game too, is he went Temple, really? Mountain, Eidolon, Eidolon, Eidolon. So I wanted to, afterwards, I was jokingly, I'm like, so we should probably get a deck check here and see how many temples and Eidolons you're playing.
But, I told you you should have played Bile Blight, but hey.
Yeah. So, but the cool thing that I was thinking, like, because he played some interesting things out of the sideboard, I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if you had a deck that had four Eidolon, four Seeker of the Way, which has lifelink when you cast your spells, and you have four Grandmasters like Ben did.
Yep.
So imagine you say you do like turn two, you play an Eidolon.
Yep.
And say you go first. And then turn three, you play your Soulfire. And they've got like, say you're playing the Mirror. And then you're like, oh, I, you know, Wild Slash your guy, right?
Yep.
So I take two.
Yep.
But then I gain two.
Yes.
And then I attack you.
Yeah.
And I gain two.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so then the next turn, say he plays his Rabble Master, he gets his token, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, I untap, right? And then you're like, oh. So what I'm going to do is, to say this is a sideboard of game, you're like, okay, now I Searing Blood your guy.
Yep.
Take two. I take two because I got my Eidolon, but I gain two.
Yep.
Then your guy deals three damage. So
you get
I gain three life.
Deals three damage to you, gains another three.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I attack you, and I gain two life again. And it's like there's all these really cool things. So your spells, you're taking damage from because they're cheap, but you're gaining your life back.
I think Eidolon is actually poised to break out.
It's so good against these control decks, right?
Wow. Yeah, I think the big thing that's holding down super aggressive red decks that Eidolon would be really great in is the prevalence of basically Course of Crucifix everywhere. I think as soon as there's enough people switching over to control decks to try to hate out the mid-rangey decks, like that's the time to break out your super fast red deck. It's just the red decks right now are not super fast enough to just run over control decks reliably. Because the cards you need to play them just lose against Course of Crucifix like every time.
Yep.
And like every mid-rangey deck is green-based and is playing Course of Crucifix, whether you're doing green-red, devotion-type stuff, straight green, or Obzon, you're just running into Course of Crucifixes everywhere you go.
But so doesn't that sound like an interesting deck? Like, I mean, just think of just all those synergies that those...
Oh, yeah, it's super cool.
And the thing that I like about it, and you know, obviously this is not like it's a no-brainer or anything, but like all those cards are all good by themselves.
Yeah.
So the Grandmaster, he's like, I can't tell you how many times, and they were doing doing an interview with him, and he's like, he was playing three Wild Slash, and he's like, I can't tell you how many times I bought back Wild Slash.
Yeah.
It seems
five
like
mana,
it seems
mana.
It's like, you know, he's pretty like sweet. It's not,
it seems really good.
And so in addition to that, like,
I mean, it's not as good as the Tasker activation, but you know, you take what you can get.
Exactly. And so like if you just take all those things and then
if you're convoking
maybe
out.
Yeah, like convoking, like you've got
Stoke the Flames.
And
well, I'm surprised that that card didn't show up even in Modern, where the Eidolon seems to be more relevant and those burn decks seem to be more relevant. But I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, it does. Dude, Eidolon won.
I know Eidolon, but I'm talking about Soulfire Grandmaster.
Oh, Soulfire.
Yeah.
But who knows what Modern is? I mean, it's kind of its own unique format onto itself.
Monster.
Standard seems to be super flavorful right now, and we'll see if the green deck prevalency of these courses starts to wane with more of these diverse decks showing up. But all I can say is time will tell. So.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about Standard right now is none of the decks can really hate out the other one. Like, the control decks are a little better than the mid-range decks, and the mid-range decks are a little better than the aggro decks, but there's not that, like, hate cycle that normally happens.
There's not that rock, paper, scissors kind
of
thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit, but it's not just completely driving out entire archetypes, which is making this a very interesting...
Thing. Rock is as good as scissors, is as good as paper. I mean, they're all pretty even. It's just what...
Or at least have, like, a 30%.
They all have a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
They all have a puncher's chance, and it's what tech you bring that weekend that really can define it, and your play style.
Yeah.
That's why it's... the best format right now. I mean, let's just put a stamp on it. Let's see what Dragons brings in the coming weeks.
I don't want to get yelled at, so you can put that stamp on.
Okay.
Arthur, you may direct all of your complaints at Cole Ferriolo.
You can reach me with those complaints at KColeF on Twitter. Bring them on. That's what I'm going to do. And if you want to talk to any of us else on Twitter, Evan, how can somebody reach you on Twitter?
You can call me racial slurs at NobodyRLY on Twitter.
And Larry, if people want to contact you on Twitter, what's your handle?
At ChatFiend.
Nice. And if you want to email us with your hate, how can they email us, Evan?
If you want to email a loogie in an email, or maybe just shit on your computer screen and then send an email, you can send that email to wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, it's been a great show this week. Hopefully we'll come back to you next week and tell you about the double uplink standard format.
The double uplink standard.
Let's just end this podcast.
Cole, you did
anymore.
Great. So for Wizards of the Cast, my name's Evan Wardell.
Larry Chapman.
And I'm Cole Ferriolo.
And thanks for listening.